Welcome back, Survivor fans. It is episode 3 of season 26, Survivor Karamoan colon dash fans versus dot favorites, where the
two.
Tarsier count was sadly at 0.
The what? Oh, the right, yes. You're right, there weren't any. I wasn't on the lookout, but you're right, there weren't any.
Apparently the action and drama in this episode was so thick, they couldn't cut in, you know, a half second glimpse at a half grasshopper being chewed on.
Speaking of the drama being so thick, why are we back to one challenge per episode?
This has been kind of how it's been.
Well, but that was back when we had Redemption Island and all that junk. Like,
that's a good point.
Like, was it this way last season? I can't remember. Was it one challenge per ep last season?
It was.
At least then, though, you could sort of get away with it because you had three camps you had to visit. And so, like, you know, just by virtue of, you know, you know, it's like Thanksgiving with a divorced family. You know, like, you got a lot of places to go. It's a busy day. But with two camps, like, we don't need to bet all the stakes on one challenge.
I feel like the structure used to be, it was a 3-day cycle where it was like one day of nothing, day of reward challenge, and then a day of tribal or immunity challenge slash tribal. Like, and that was the cycle. But with the number of players being varied, they've mixed that up some more.
I guess, but it's just. So you suppose they're going, like, every 2 days now?
Right. Like, they went on day 5. There was tribal on day 5.
Right, but that might have been a... Well, you don't start with a rest day thing. Like,
there was tribal on day 3. No, there was tribal on day 3.
Oh, it was?
And there was tribal on day 5, yeah.
Oh, so it's just day off challenge now.
Yeah, right. But so, who knows?
So did this on day 7?
With the number of people they have and... I'm sure they're counting on somebody getting medevaced or quitting. They can pad it a little bit, and then if they need to, they can always go the dreaded double tribal.
Right, right. Oh well. I miss having the. You know, I feel like the more challenges you have, the more chances there are for drama. The more chances there are for people to get pissed off at someone else for not pulling their weight or for being an idiot or whatever.
Right. I mean, Lord knows, though, there are some individuals who don't need a challenge every day to get their dander up.
Well, right.
I might be talking about someone from this season. Maybe. I don't know. Probably Julia.
Julia made the episode. When she showed up, it was funny. I was like, oh my gosh, this is the person Ralph was talking about last week. I couldn't have told you anything about her except that she was a her.
I have to find this tweet because I follow all the Survivors on Twitter, and She put a tweet out during the show that was just great.
Including her? You follow her?
I do follow her.
Did she only tweet for the first time this week also?
That would have been great. It was something about, like, hashtag I said things. I have to find this thing. It was really good. Well, I'm failing. Anyways, the synopsis of it is that she said, hashtag I said things, hashtag actual contestant. Like, she's very self-aware of how little
she's aware she hasn't been featured. She didn't make the cut for the first 2 weeks, which I guess bodes well for you a little bit. Like, at the very least, it means you're gonna make it to like episode 6 or 7, because if you were gonna be out in the first 3 episodes, they'd make sure that you were seen.
Yes.
In the first 3 episodes, so that we knew who the heck got voted out.
What do you know about Hope?
Exactly. Well, what do you mean, I know about Hope?
What do you know about Hope?
Well, I know she was tight with Eddie, and she was, like, semi-decent. Well, I shouldn't say semi-decent at extracting information. It was more just Shamar being a moron. Right. But, I don't know. I mean, that's true. We don't know a lot about Hope, but we at least knew who she was. Like, we were aware of her existence.
No, only in the and Eddie sense.
I guess. I mean, but still, she was somebody because she was a part of that alliance that was drawing ire.
Correct.
You know, like, if, you know, Julia was a member of granted, she was a member of an alliance as well, but, like, I mean, she was the silent partner, literally. So.
Well, I just like the self-awareness of knowing that, like, you kind of failed to make an impact in the first two episodes of the season, and that has to at least stick with you in some part of you.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to business. Shamar decides that, you know, being allowed to stay another day gives him license to just go off on every single person. People in his alliance, mostly people out of his alliance.
I didn't even know what they were arguing about.
Right.
Like, okay, so he was arguing with Reynold because Reynold, like, I guess he had beef with Reynold because Reynold voted for him. And then, so Reynold fired back, and then Shamar's like, you're just angry because your plan didn't work. And
right.
I'm like, well, right, yes.
Yes.
But why does it, but you're the one correct. Who came after him. And then he's yelling at Matt. I don't even remember what it was for.
No, who knows?
It was something that apparently Shamar said, but also somebody else said, and he was ticked off because Matt was giving Shamar crap about it and wasn't giving the other person crap about it, whatever it was he said. I can't even remember.
This is a guy who just has a lot of, I don't know, unhappiness.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of playing armchair psychologist, you can't help but wonder how much of this is, you know, buried emotion from multiple tours in the Middle East, you know, which really makes you sort of feel for the guy. On the flip side, like, just watching it is painful.
It's similar to Brandon. There's a high and a low, you know. There's the guy that can talk thoughtfully about what he experienced, and then there's the guy who just can't deal with emotions except to yell them.
Yeah, but his lows are only, or his highs, I don't know which one is which, are only in the confessional, you know, like, and with Sherry. And that's right. Only because Sherry knows how to manage him.
Correct.
That's
a tough word to use on a person.
What?
Manage. Like, maybe she's
I mean, that's what she's doing. She's handling him. She's his handler.
She is handling him. Yes. That is true.
I mean, we saw that was in, like, the second scene of the episode, is after the blow-up, you know, she comes to him the next morning and is, you know, is literally, she's handling him. She's being his advisor and, like, trying to get him to sort of fall in line and not go crazy, because she realizes the more he does that, the tougher it's going to be for her to keep him around.
It's surprising that more people don't understand how to not provoke that reaction from Shamar. Like, that seems like a skill that you should have, to be able to deal with a difficult person and not, you know, give them that trigger to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think what it is, though, is it's like, I mean, think about the only two people we have not seen him completely go off on. That's Sherry, and I believe, is it Mike? Is that his name? The Panama hat guy?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only two people he's not gone off on, and those are also easily the oldest people there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's, you know, that's life experience there. And everybody else just, you know, they get, they're, you know, it's just boiled over frustration with him. And they can't, they can't help themselves.
Right.
You know? They see somebody just being perennially abrasive, and they can't handle it.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, he threatened to quit, but, you know, I didn't think he was actually going to follow through on that. I honestly didn't think he was going to follow through on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he totally set that up for his own sort of glorious moment as a loyal soldier or whatever. I mean, that felt very like, you know, let's see if I can get how much I can get them to sort of beg me to stay, how much I can get them to try to make me sound like I'm being a bad person if I leave, so that I can then turn it around and say, oh, well, for you guys, I'll stay. You know, and try to paint himself as the martyr, and Reynolds said it very well. Mm-hmm. He's like,
50,000 people would line up to play the game.
Yeah, 50,000 people would line up to play this game, and you're trying, and you basically just teed up a situation to make yourself look like a big deal because you just unquit.
Mm-hmm. And I hate it because it makes me agree with Reynolds, which I don't want to do. I mean, that's just unpalatable.
Well, and Reynolds didn't
the
play...
The guy's a jerk.
Well, and he didn't play this episode very well. I mean, was obviously privy to all of what was going on there with Shamar's waffling about staying or going or whatever. Who knows whether that was legit or not. I mean, he should have been playing on that the second they lost that challenge. He and Eddie and Hope should all have been trying to amplify that as you're gonna have to deal with that on a 3-day cycle. You are going to be perpetually dealing with somebody who's threatening to quit to make you remind him and remind yourself of how valuable he is to the group. How valuable he is to his alliance.
It's not going to be long before he's no longer valuable, although for Sherry it will be. But she's going to have a hard time. At some point she's going to realize that trying to keep him is going to work more against her than for her.
Yeah, I mean, if she can keep handling him the way she did this episode, it might just work. I mean, it seems to me...
She needs to get him to the merge when they have to group together and they're forced to be together.
Yeah. Although, I mean, the other irony is he's not even that valuable to them in challenges. Like,
he's pretty strong. He caught one. He, like, converted one of the tosses.
He converted one toss there. Mm-hmm. What he didn't do is the thing that he should have been, like, the primary member of their team for. And that was lugging that giant chest, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Through the water there. He should have been the one getting down and just heaving that thing up so that everybody could drag it. And
they had a good system. They were moving that thing along.
I don't know.
That's where they surged ahead, moving it through the water. The problem was on the beach, and that's probably where he should have really kind of given them the advantage. But you're right. I don't know.
And
he's got contacts, Chris. How's he supposed to do anything in the water?
Right, exactly. Every challenge, it's like... There's always something with him that he's managing to make an issue, whether it's, well, clearly, because I brought up this idea, it's just going to get dismissed, or, you know, he's going to flip out about the continent. Now, to be fair, he did swim out there with goggles on, and somebody took the goggles from him, so... I mean, on the other hand, I got to imagine somebody asked him for the goggles, and he handed them to him. I don't think somebody really literally reached on his face and pulled them off of his face.
But you don't think maybe they came off as he jumped in, and then, like, someone just put them on, and...
Maybe.
I feel like that's how possible. I feel like that's how it played.
Certainly plausible.
Yeah, that's how... I feel like... Yeah, whatever. should we go over to the faves?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Cochran's, you know... sort of waxing poetic about it all, and like he was fantastically meta about about this episode.
Of course, we appreciate that.
Talking about how he was basically watching Survivor while playing Survivor. He's, you know, he's surrounded by women in their underwear, which is just never a reality for him. I mean, well, I guess plural women in their underwear is really never a reality for most people. But I got the impression he was more playing on his lack of sociability in general.
I have fond memories of college and living in co-ed dorms and, like, the girls walking around in towels. I remember this.
That's true.
I remember being 18 and being like, this is pretty fantastic. I could get used to that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. When I went to college, I definitely didn't research that aspect of it enough. And I definitely lucked out.
No, I did not.
You know?
I definitely did not research that at all.
Yeah. You know, whether you were just like single sex dorm or single sex floors or single sex by room, like I was not paying attention to that at all, and I definitely think it would have been I would have had a much different and perhaps more socially stunting experience had it been a single sex dorm.
Right. Right. Yeah. It was definitely a wake up call. I don't know. Just happy memories. I've got a silly grin on my face right now. Okay. So, you know, Philip spies Brenda in the Survivor gym, and he decides he's going to get a few reps in.
I love how that, like, prompted him to, like, talk about how he takes care of business regularly. And it's like, this is totally the first we've ever seen him doing any working out. And granted, that could totally be editing, but I have my doubts.
Right. But hey, who knew they worked out? Have we ever seen the survivors working out except for like coaches Tai Chi?
Yeah, there was there was the coach yoga, or whatever the hell he was doing, and that was
about
it.
Never resistance training, like literally curls and tricep extensions and
things of
that nature. It was good. And, a little exposition from Philip about, you know, his talents in the basketball gym, complete with the sound effects, which were spectacular.
Right. Nothing but air.
Give him the double dribble, bam, bam.
And nothing but air.
Fade away. Nothing but air. That is a direct quote.
I love it. That's right. He touts himself for the double dribble.
Right. Double dribble, nothing but air.
Nothing but air. Oh my goodness, he's become a caricature of himself. It's hilarious.
Right. Well, hey, who's complaining?
Well, that's something else. He's something else.
Who's complaining? Right.
You know what's funny is we had Andrea, I think, talking with who was it, Cochran, and then I guess eventually Brandon, where they were observing Corinne, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Corinne and Malcolm. And they felt like they were engaged in a somewhat intense conversation. And it suddenly occurred to me, like, I guess this is something you sort of pick up on quickly when you're on the island, and I just never really thought about. But, like, the body language of conversation and how easily read that is from far away. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how, like, people going off on their own is really not a big deal. Because if you can see that, you can sort of see... I mean, I think the important thing when you're having a conversation one-on-one with somebody is you got to be walking. Like, you're not face-to-face. When you walk, you are preoccupying yourself with the walk as well, and thus just not facially going to be as expressive and mirroring the conversation as you would be if you were just standing there face to face.
Yeah.
You know, and like the other thing that came to mind is I feel like, and I really have no idea if this is true, but I feel like, you know, there's a certain thing you do with your eyes depending on how, like, intense the conversation is.
And Corinne's very expressive too.
Well, that too, yes. But like your eyes are wider. I bet your pupils dilate in a certain way. Like I would imagine your pupils probably expand a certain degree in the sort of under sort of the heading of like your eyes and your brain want to take in as much information as possible.
Essentially you want the island to be like Aaron Sorkin's The West Wing, where everyone's just walking from
the
place
walk
to place
talk,
having their conversations,
right,
instead of giving away information about how they're standing and
right
gesturing.
I mean, that's what you need to do, because I realized you could sort of see it ironically, in the conversation that you were watching between Cochran and Andrea, because they were having themselves a somewhat intense conversation, trying to figure out what was going on,
right,
and their faces were expressing that.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. And I think Andrea's playing really hard.
She is.
I think she needs to relax a little bit.
Yeah. Well, but she's...
I like that she's looking out for, like, the tight connections, but at the same time, like...
Yeah, she's playing. She dodged her first bullet that first week.
That's what I mean. Like, that should have been a wake-up call. Like, oh,
yeah,
I need to cool a little bit.
Yeah, you need to ease off the gas a little bit. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm may have stumbled into the perfect situation here. Is, you know, because he found that idol. Now, the thing I thought was sort of weird is that why would you go looking for an idol with a person that you don't really want to know whether or not you have an idol?
Why would you do it?
Yeah, I mean, because, like...
I suppose it's something to do. You know, you need something to do while you're out there.
And
if you go alone, it's like...
Yeah, you got to be careful.
Well, what is he doing, you know?
Well,
if you're going with someone, it's like, we were just talking.
Well, so here's my other thought. So he reached into the tree or whatever and found the idol there.
Yeah.
Now, he probably knows he's got it the second he makes contact with it in there.
Correct.
Why doesn't he make contact with it and let it go in there and say, ah, no, there's nothing in there?
Oh, I see.
You know,
I think he couldn't help his reaction. I think once he
that was the one thing I wondered is like, is it too instantaneous of a reaction that you just can't contain it?
Yeah, I watched it a couple times. I think his reaction was genuine and.
Well, of course it was. I mean,
I think if he okay, note to future survivors, right? Have this play ready.
Exactly. I mean, you know where it is. All you got to do is keep her looking, and then. Whenever, half an hour later, you come back and you go and fish it out. I mean, obviously, the one risk you run is her sticking her hand in there and grabbing it, and now, A, she has it, and B, she may become a little suspicious of you wondering
more than
how
a
you
little suspicious.
Right.
I think.
Well, but it's possible that you just didn't do a good job of feeling around, I guess. Mm-hmm. But you are at least drawing her suspicion if that happens. So you do have to sort of feel out how well she's going to trust you if you say, nah, there's nothing in there. At the very least, you know, you've got longer arms than she does, so maybe you can wedge it further back there than she can reach.
Yeah. I don't know.
But once again, our boy Malcolm, A, has an idol. B...
Did he find it sans clue last time? No, they were looking for it at the camp before they left.
Yeah, but... No, I don't think they had a clue.
Yeah.
I don't think they had the clue. Maybe they did. I don't remember. Because I don't think they won anything to have been able to get a clue.
Right. But they were just sort of looking around at things.
Right.
They kind of looked for the right thing.
But, I mean, you know, an idol alone is not enough to carry you. But he's in a prime spot because he's got the idol and he's in the majority alliance. And that's just huge there. And then on top of it, the thing that's so great is the rest of the group, he doesn't know it yet, but the rest of the group seems to want to target Corinne. Which could actually work out really well for him, because now this will get rid of the person that knows he has the idol. That he was not terribly thrilled about being tied to in the first place.
But just tied to out of, that was like, you know, what was left. You know.
Well, right, yeah, they were the leftovers.
Conscious decision, right.
And so in that sense, he may not want to get rid of Corinne, just because she is sort of his closest ally now. But he's a strong enough social player that I don't think he needs to worry too much about... I mean, like, because they talked about those pairings, like Dawn and Cochran and Andrea and Philip, and I...
Right.
I don't think those pairings from previous... based on previous seasons...
Phil and Andrea,
mean
no, but
much,
Dawn and Cochran, I think... The Dawn and Cochran connection exists.
I mean, Dawn and Cochran a little bit, yes, but... I don't think it's much. I mean, it's not Andrea and Matt from their original season. It's not it's not Rob and Amber. It's not Denise and Mal. Well, Denise and Malcolm, I guess, ended up splitting.
Speaking of Andrea, she said something I took as odd. She goes to Cochran with this idea that Corinne is too much of a player, that we need to watch out for her. And she throws out Brandon as someone who could be, and I quote, just as loyal as Corinne. And I thought it was just a strange choice as the person you would want to bring on as if you were going to replace Corinne in that.
Well,
alliance.
How much does Andrea know about Brandon? Like, is she a fan? You know, does she know his game? I mean, she's not like Cochran's the kind of person that you would never expect that from. I mean, A, because he played with Brandon, but B, because. You know, he was a super fan, so he's going to know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree with you. That's a weird statement.
Strange choice.
I mean, but the thing
Bravo
is...
Bravo to Brandon
a...
having his guard up. He's totally like, yeah, they told me this, but it's total crap. And
right.
He's not falling for everything, which
well,
I
and he... But she is sort of right. I mean, he is a fairly loyal player.
Was very loyal to Coach.
Right, he was very loyal to Coach. I mean, on the other hand, he also seems to have, at the very least, he's aware that that was a little bit of his downfall, that he was too loyal down the stretch. Whether or not he's actually able to turn that into, you know, more informed gameplay is another story. But... I don't know. I mean, I get what are their other options, really? I mean, their other options
option,
are
I think is
Brenda.
I think Brenda's a very good choice if they had gone with Brenda.
I think if you bring Brenda in, all you've done is replace Corinne with another Corinne. Like, if you don't like Corinne, if you don't like Corinne and her style, like, you don't want to replace her with basically a clone of her, and that's what Brenda is. I mean, Brenda's very much like Corinne.
That's a good point. Okay. Never mind. I'll shut up.
The person you should bring in...
These are all valid points.
But still, the person you should bring in is the last one, Eric. Eric's an idiot.
He's not. I don't think he's playing the season dumb. He has a different look about him this season. I really think that. He just seems cool this season. Like, he's been made to look a fool, and he's not going to be made to look a fool twice. I really think he's a sharp player. All right.
I mean, I guess he was a little bit sharp with Philip and the sort of, like...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was really sharp so much as just, like, not appreciating condescension. But...
Fans versus Favorites 1. How long ago was that?
I believe it was... I want to say it was, like, season 16... Maybe 17, something
so
like
5
that.
5 years ago.
So that would be that would make it 5 years ago.
5 or 6 years ago. Okay. So he went into that season like around like he was like 19, 20. You know.
Probably.
He's solid mid-20s now. Like he's a different person.
Well, person. That, I mean, that's true. I mean, you're talking about 5 years of maturation.
He was all starry-eyed the first time. It was really adorable.
Yeah. It was exactly this. The season aired at this portion of the year in 08. So, yeah, that would be five years ago.
Nice.
That might make it 16 then. Yeah, because Samoa, I, for some reason, know to be 19 off the top of my head. And there was three seasons before Samoa.
Let's get to the immunity challenge. We're back in the water, which is always encouraging. The one water challenge, I mentioned this to my roommate, like, the one water challenge I wish they would bring back, because there was some challenge that ended with this platform in the water that was small, but every member of the tribe
had to get on it.
And it was just great, trying to, like, watch them all scramble up there and people falling off, and, like, it was very tense, because everyone's around there.
They did have a little bit of that going on in this one, with the little train tracks that everybody had to stand on. Although it really didn't matter once you got the first set of tracks in place because you could spread out.
Correct. And you could totally divide the labor, like people who are dragging chests, people who are throw the rope. Like,
that was odd, by the way. Like, why were they continually switching? They've done this in the last couple challenges. This one,
it's not exhausting to throw that ring.
Exactly.
It takes very minimal effort.
And also with the ring toss in the last challenge. Like, right. Malcolm nets two, and then because he didn't hit the third one, they switch out for Philip. Like, Malcolm's clearly good at this. Why did they switch
him? I think they brought in, like, Allie to help, like, on the ring toss, and she just started flinging him, like, 15 feet, like, in the other direction.
Yeah, I don't get this, like, you know... This is like Little League here, mm-hmm. where everyone gets a turn in the back.
Yeah.
So, like, that just seems silly. It doesn't seem like well-informed strategy.
What'd you think of the challenge? I thought it was great. Like, especially the...
I don't know. I was a little disappointed because it was like... It just seemed like there was not a lot of... I mean, I guess you do have that ring toss for the tracks... But it just didn't seem like there was a lot of opportunity for catch-up. I mean, they did end up staggering, you know, sort of back and forthing a couple of times.
Uh-huh.
But when it was described by Probst, I kind of felt like once they got the chest onto that platform, I was like, oh, that's it?
No, like, but that ring required a lot more finesse than it seemed like. It became a dexterity challenge.
I don't know. I mean, how many tosses do you think the winning tribe made total for the three... I'd be surprised if it was more than 7.
Oh, I was going to say it was a minimum 12.
Oh, really? You thought there were that many misses?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they're not showing them all, but I don't know. I got the impression that it was moving more quickly than that. I don't know.
Yeah. Shamar doing his best to help by telling him, screaming at him to relax. Like, now you just need to relax!
Yes, I definitely noticed that.
Because that's how you get someone to relax.
Grab them by the shoulders, shake them like crazy. Relax! Relax! Why aren't you relaxing?
All right.
Oh.
So.
As only Shamar can do.
Yeah. Back at the beach, Laura drives the bus again. She has a great plan. It's like, make it easy. Girls vote Hope, boys vote Eddie, which is...
Well, no, wait, you forgot. They put in some footage from last week.
Of?
No, they didn't actually put in footage from last week, but we essentially got footage from last week. The immediate after challenge footage was...
Of Shamar laying in the tent.
Shamar's laying in the tent.
Reynold complaining.
Reynold standing outside, and then barking at each other again, and everybody else standing there and watching it.
Correct.
And Shamar going into, like, you know... I'm going to verbally waterboard you and just keep yelling until you stop and you just can't take anymore. And everybody's gonna walk away thinking Shamar is insane and a baby, and they're still gonna keep him around.
Right, because It's still better to break all of those couples up, and there's no need to start cannibalizing your own group when you still have more work to do.
I guess, but I actually really thought that there might be something happening there. You said it, Julia? No, Laura. Yeah, she was talking to Reynold, and it was like, you deliver two, I can deliver three, and... I thought that was going to happen because she seemed to be really nervous about her place because she had, as she put it, been doing a backstroke in the wrong direction at one point during the challenge.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Is they were freaking out because Hope tells Julia that she knows the plan. Julia tells the group that Shamar told them the plan. And the funny thing is, even if they know the plan...
It doesn't matter.
They can beat the plan. Like, the plan works whether they know about it or not.
Well, except that's not entirely true. Because
Someone flips, throws a vote at Eddie?
Well, there's a few things.
Oh, they throw a vote at Eddie. Give him the necklace.
Not even that. Because their concern was that Shamar was flipping. Like, if Shamar's sharing the plan with him, why is he sharing the plan with him? Maybe it's because he's going to vote with him. Mm. You know? Now, it doesn't take a genius to figure out, like, those are Shamar's three most hated people on the island.
Exactly.
So he's not going to flip with them.
Right.
But that's what,
you know what
that
I found
was,
funny?
It's what it sounded like they were sweating.
Shamar had complete deniability when he's like, I'm not writing your name down. It's like, yeah, because you were assigned to not write your name down. You were assigned to write down Eddie.
Right.
So it's easy for him to kind of be flirty with Hope and be like, look, you deserved me this game. I'm not going to...
Well,
but
he
did want to save her and tell her to vote Eddie, which was funny.
Well, except that I love how in the confessional he makes it sound like he gave her an absolute blueprint for how to stick around, when he didn't at all. Like, he was completely speaking in code. And it was so foolish, because it's like, you've already done enough to incriminate yourself in terms of what you were sharing with her. So why not just tell her what to do? You know, if you want to keep her around, then tell her, vote for Eddie. Because if she votes for Eddie, she preserves herself.
Haven't we seen someone take advantage of knowing the split and throwing
a vote
at the other person and then throwing the idol at them and flipping it around? Although I guess they still wouldn't have the votes to go, like, you still need the votes to, like, kick out the person you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's 3-3-3 and one of them changes their vote to Eddie, then there's still only two votes going at Shamar, so...
Correct.
Yeah, never mind. This doesn't work.
Glad we could play that out for you.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe it. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
No, yeah. But at the very least, she should have just flipped her vote to Eddie. Although, by the way, with the tied vote, like, so usually when there's a tie, it's because it's a two-way tie. And it totally makes sense that the people who are now the only people you can vote for don't vote.
Right. They should have been allowed to vote.
They should be allowed to vote.
They should be allowed to vote.
Yeah.
Correct.
Because all it does is exacerbate the balance of power in favor of the already...
I thought it was odd, too.
...privileged tribe. Yeah. That makes no sense to me.
I agree.
What I thought would have been really interesting is if, after that, in the revote, Julia and Lauren switch and vote for Shamar, and then you get a 3-3 tie again. That would have been fun. And actually, would you be able to do that and then, like...
Bring
Eddie,
back Eddie.
Would Eddie be now, like, eligible to vote again? That'd be interesting.
I don't know.
That'd be really interesting.
what my notes for Tribal Council just say Shamar, 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 Shamar. That's what my
notes
say. Well,
yeah, I mean, he's just... I mean, it's funny that he seems to think that he can... Like, I guess I shouldn't say seems to think. He believes it. He believes his own hype. He clearly believes his own hype. Like, his version of... Like, he is spouting his version of reality. Like, he believes that these are the way things transpired. Even though, like, we have witnessed that these are not the way things have transpired.
Mm-hmm.
But... Because I can't imagine that he would continue to try to keep up that front or whatever if he didn't actually truly believe it. And
some people just like talking about themselves, though.
I guess. I mean, Sherry, you know, demonstrates her deft again, I think, at Tribal Council, because she, you know, she gets put to the same question everybody else has. Everybody else basically has not really done anything to offend. I mean, I feel like, who was it, Julia? Like, what beef did Julia have with Shamar?
Yeah, that didn't make sense.
I don't even know. But, like, he went off on her. Mm-hmm. And it was basically because Sherry knows what to say. She was like, you know, she, mm-hmm. she couched it all in this, like, position, this sort of stance of understanding him.
Right.
And
being the managers.
Like, yeah, and relating Shamar. Him. And she like related to him well there. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, she demonstrated understanding that he felt crossed by those people. You know, and I think that was the thing right there. She made it, you know, she expressed like empathy for that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, of course she gets done talking and you look at Shamar and Shamar is all but ready to like hug her. It's like she gets me, you know.
Well, this is a guy who just wants to be understood, you know, that's really fundamentally what we're talking about.
Exactly. He makes it really difficult to be understood, and but he wants to be understood. He's an interesting
Anything
character.
Else? I don't know that there's a whole lot more to say. I don't mean to cut you off, but...
No, I don't think there's really anything else.
Kind of ho-hum.
Yeah, what did we get in the teaser for next week?
It's been a while.
I don't even remember. Oh well,
I'm sure it was red herring. That's my story. I'm sticking to.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, like our teaser from last week was quotes from Brandon about "I will burn
I'll
our
pee
camp to
in
ground,"
the rice. I'll
which
pee
is
in the water. I don't care.
Which is, of course, him in a confessional speaking completely hypothetically about the situation where somebody actually tells him he's going home.
Which no one would ever do that.
Right, because they all know you tell Brandon Hans that, he's going to do things
he's
like
pee in the rice, pee in the beans,
and burn right. down the camp. Okay. Exactly.
Do we have an online presence, Chris? Is there anything to talk about there?
We do. We're on
we have
Twitter.
A podcast
the handle
up.
Is
That's
at
good.
Tribal Podcast. Our email account is podcast@tc.vanv.net, and our RSS feed is found at tc.vanv.net.
Thank you, Chris. And for all of your future Survivor needs, you can follow all of your favorite Survivors. I have them followed. You can find my handle. It's at LARPHB, LARPHB. And I've got all the kids followed there. So if you want to hop on my train, feel free, and then you can find all the Survivors on there too.
Wow, look at you. Like, taking your private persona public now.
I know. It's amazing.
It is. You're
the things
man,
I do for our listeners.
You're living right. in the public eye.
All right, so hopefully next week we'll be out earlier, right? Is that the hope?
Next week we hope to have our podcast out sort of timely and right after the episode. And then we'll go on a week hiatus after that while I'll be out of the country. And
having your own personal Survivor,
we'll do a double,
in
and we'll do a double podcast on the 23rd.
All right. Until then, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you later.